call the House Trade and Economic Development Committee to order. And I'd like to call Dr. Kohler, the President of OHSU, and also the other members, if you'd like to join him. Especially, I want to thank you, Dr. Kohler, for your special arrangement and to come over here. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the invitation. For the record, my name is Peter Kohler, President of OHSU, and with me this morning, Dr. Dan Dorsa, who is our Vice President for Research, and Steve Statham, who is our Chief Administrative Officer. Okay. So thank you for this opportunity. We have some visual aids this morning, which we'll see how well it works. We'll turn the news palette here to Mr. Statham. I'd like to start out, though, with a chart.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I must apologize to the OHSU people for our screen. We had an excellent screen located right in this room, and I guess the word spread that it was an excellent screen. And when we came in this morning, there was no excellent screen, and so we've got this screen instead.
Well, can everybody see it?
We have the printouts here.
And we have passed out to you some material which I think includes information regarding OHSU in your own district, so hopefully that will be helpful to you as well. This chart shows what I think is a success story for OHSU, and it goes back to 1975, as you can see. A couple of things happened, and I'd like to point those out to you. I was recruited in 1988, at which point we had a fairly substantial state appropriation as a percentage of our budget, which, of course, was smaller at that time. But you can see there, that first green column, how we have grown in terms of our overall budget over the past couple of decades. The state appropriation to us in absolute dollars has actually fallen substantially, and as a percent of our budget has also fallen. I want to point out to you later why that's more important than it would seem to be. Grant awards, the third column, Dr. Dorsa will probably talk a little bit more about that, but you can see we've gone from somewhere in the range of $15 million a year to $260 million. It's important to know that most of this money is NIH money for which we compete. This is very good for the state. Every grant that we have is very much like a small business, and of course it creates the intellectual property. The indirect cost money that we get from the federal government to run the grant does not quite keep up with the cost of actually operating the grant itself. So there is a gap there which we need to fund through other sources. So we have done a very good job. The number nationally for this differential is probably in the range of 15%. Dr. Dorsa has worked very hard to get this down to about 8%. But the more successful we are, the more it costs us. It's a little bit of a paradox, but it's also what, frankly, we think the state badly needs. The Oregon Opportunity was passed a couple sessions ago. It is just beginning to really kick in right now, in that the construction that you'll hear more about later, funded by the Oregon Opportunity, is just about to be completed. That will occur late this year and early 2006. So the laboratories into which we can put the individuals who will help enhance our research programs is just coming online relatively soon. I also want to remind the committee that the idea behind the Oregon Opportunity was to take some of the tobacco settlement money and put that into health-related research that could be good for the state, both from a health perspective and also from the economy. But it was going back to tobacco settlement money as the funding mechanism for what we were doing there. The next slide. Oh, by the way, go back to that 1 second. If you look at that $260 million, I think it's important to point out that this is generated by our faculty, primarily in the medical school. And these faculty members are quite in demand nationally when they're able to bring in large amounts of grant revenue. So they're movable. So it is not like this is an immutable number that will stay the way it is. Our faculty are always being recruited And right now, we do have somewhat of a morale problem related to our current budget. And I think it's very important that we continue to work to stabilize our faculty members, because when they go, they would take their grants with them. And that number could go down instead of up. Next slide, please. This shows our total revenue. And I think you can see there that it's a blend, largely related to the grant support, between the university and the hospital. But both of these have been increasing over the last several years. And our financial impact, as you can imagine, has also grown. We have about 11,500 employees right now. Since we became a public corporation, we've created really well over 4,000 new jobs at a time when our state grant or state appropriation was actually dropping. We've become Oregon's fourth largest employer. And we have room to grow. We anticipate that when our three new buildings come online, we will actually add to that number over the next decade by at least 5,000 additional employees. Our operating annual budget, which is not including the practice plan, is approximately $1.2 billion. We tried to look at different ways to convince you that we're a good bargain for the state. The first is we pay taxes. By the way, this does not include part of the practice plan, approximately equal to the amount of our state appropriation currently. Hopefully it will not drop too much from here, but as you know, it's potentially able to do that. And the other thing, we talk a lot about leveraging, and I've realized that people don't understand often what we mean by that. We have several major activities that go on all at one time at OHSU. We certainly have the educational programs, we have the research activity, and we have clinical programs. The grants that we get for research cannot be used for teaching. That money is not fungible. That's a very important distinction that I think a lot of people are not aware of. But the educational part of the stipend for an individual is the part where we actually pay for how much educational activity they perform. That's how we leverage, because they bring the other things with them when we're able to pay them something for education. And the educational part is going to have to come from either the state, from endowment, which we would love to grow to the point where we could be less reliant, but we're not there at this time, or from tuition. And as you probably know, tuitions are very high. Those are the funding streams that go toward education. Research must pay for itself. That's the way the grants are written. And the clinical revenue that we bring in is leveraged to help cover other things. But there's a limit to how much we can leverage this. But that's what we mean by leveraging. We get a little bit for education. We use it for the other things that have great economic import. Next slide, please. Now, the question is, you know, what is our impact on the economy at large? And as you know, we are very interested in being statewide. But the factor by which we look at the amount of revenue we generate and how that translates into other jobs around the state is very variable. The most conservative estimate is $2.7 billion worth of regional economic activity. The multiplier really should probably be higher, particularly with the type of stimulation of the economy we're trying to create with our small companies and so forth. It's probably closer to the $3.9 million there, but it's a big economic import, I think, to the economy. We are expanding. The expansion effort is one building is supported largely by the Oregon Opportunity Tobacco settlement money that we have converted the state by the vote of the electorate into a general obligation bond on the part of the state. One building is really being bought by bond money that is in conjunction or in cooperation with our practice group that will fund a new practice building. And the third expansion is also bonded money that we're using to expand the hospital, because we're trying to grow our way out of our budget problem to the best we can. Bond money, as everybody knows, needs to be paid back by some revenue stream, and that creates some limits on what it can be used for. So we can't use bond money for some of our educational programs either. I just want to make sure everybody understands that, and I'm sure you do. Now, after the expansion occurs, right now the 5,500 construction jobs that are underway are part of these three buildings. They are not continuous employment, but a lot of people are working on these. We should add between 5,000 and 6,000 new jobs once we occupy these buildings and get our programs completely up and running, which will be a huge benefit, I think, for the economy. You can see there that the multiplier effect on jobs would be approximately 62,000 all told throughout the local area and the state. Next slide, please. This is a little more about our research activity, the quadrupling of awards, which I think really is a tribute to our faculty members and their ability to compete in a peer-reviewed system for this grant money that's so important for us. And by the way, that's also how we establish our national reputation. It is related to a lot of factors, but the most important of these is probably the grant money that we achieve. $247 million are the latest awards from out of state. I mentioned already, each grant is like a small business, usually employing not only the principal investigator, but technicians, secretarial support, and so forth. And the new research space, the best correlation of our research productivity is with laboratory space. So as these buildings come online again, we should be able to take off in terms of additional research. Our research awards here are shown. This little plateau is again related to how many people can you pack into the space that we currently have. That should break free here at the end of 2005-2006. We are recruiting new investigators to be part of this research build-out. Some of those are able to find spaces that we're cramming them into on the campus right now. Others are waiting in queue really for the new buildings to come online. And the federal part, again, I think is very important because the federal money has this indirect cost component added to it, which allows us to work much more economically. Foundations are important, but foundations frequently are limited with the amount of support they provide, and it makes that gap between the research and the cost of doing the research even slightly greater. The last slide, I think, has a very important point on it, and that is, if you take a look at our schools, I'm not going to go through all the different names there, but I will mention for Representative Riley, the ORPRC, which is doing quite well between 2002 and 2003, is in your district. The School of Medicine is our major economic engine. This is the place where many of our investigators work, who are both able to bring the grant revenue to OHSU and who are also being recruited heavily by other institutions to the south of us and nationwide. For example, we just learned that we're losing a man who is going to become the chief of gastroenterology at the University of Colorado from our gastroenterology division at OHSU, leaving us a hole to which we need to recruit somebody. But it's a good thing in that our people are so good. A mid-level person in our division is being recruited to be chief at the University of Colorado. So in a way, it's part of what enhances our reputation. But the School of Medicine there is in many ways key to our continuing to bring in both grant money and research money. And that's where the morale factor, I think, needs to be attended to, which we're doing with constant meetings with our faculty members, trying to make sure we stabilize them, get them to look at the bright future that we're creating against the backdrop of decreasing revenue support from our grant from the state. So I want to put that pitch in there. The School of Medicine is very important. It is somewhat more fragile than people realize that it is because these folks are so movable, but it is the thing that makes our hospital work, and it, to a large degree, not totally, but to a large degree, it is also the thing that makes our research programs operate so well.
Okay, Dr. Kohler?
Yes.
And what's the prospect of a federal research grant this year? Is it looking good?
We were running. Dr. Dorsa is in charge of that. The last he and I talked, which was about a week ago, we were running about 11% ahead of last year. But we had a month of June in the last fiscal year that it was a blowout month, $62 million worth of grant awards in a single month, unbelievably high. So we need to sustain a higher number, but in spite of the lack of space that we have, I would say our grant revenue is holding up well. Dr. Dorsey, would you like to comment further on that?
Yeah, from what we can tell, as I'll describe in my presentation.
Would you state your name, even though?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dan Dorsey. I'm Vice President for Research at OHSU.
Okay, Dan. Thank you.
From what I can tell, because of the Oregon opportunity recruitments that have occurred to this point and the success we're having with our existing faculty, we're actually exceeding the increase that the federal funding agencies are realizing, which is certainly down from previous years. It's more on the order of 2% as opposed to the 15% growth, which was the case over the last 5 years or so. So my feeling is we're sort of out competing the market, if you will, based on the numbers we're seeing right now.
Okay. Thank you very
much. And I think our strategy has been to try to recruit investigators who are so strong that we do outperform the national increases for the NIH budget.
Thank you very much. And Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Along the same lines, gentlemen, I'm sure you're tracking the federal budget process. Do you have concerns with the discussions currently going on in Washington that it's going to have a negative impact on the plans you're projecting here?
I will take, yes, we are very much, in fact, I'm on one of the groups that is constantly lobbying for increasing NIH support. I think it's logical in a way. By the way, we're also very interested in the National Science Foundation getting additional support as well. I think it is not illogical for them to take a brief pause after the doubling that was achieved over the past 5 years. I think that was a very important step. Health is a very high priority at the national level. I think that Elias Zerhuni, who is currently running NIH, is a very effective lobbyist, if you will, in terms of converting the scientific advances we have to real healthcare advances. We have one of those at our place, the Gleevec drug, which was a real breakthrough, is the kind of thing they're looking for there. Not that science isn't great, you know, for the pure science end, but we'd like to see it improve human life somehow. And I think he'll be able to convince NIH, but probably not this year, but to resume a higher rate of increase. Again, we want to be able to compete for the limited grant increases that are available now better than other places if we can. But we are concerned and we're keeping an eye on it.
Thank you.
Representative Dallin.
Yes, Chairman Lim. A couple of questions. You talked about tuition at OHSU. How does it compare to similar institutions? Much higher, some higher, lower? How does it compare?
Well, it depends on what you think we are. If you think we're a state institution, it is very high. I think that in terms of responding, our problem with our budgeting, it's already been very high on a public institution side. To the proposed cuts by the governor is that the legislative session will not be completed by the time we have to accept students and indicate to them what a tuition might be. But our tuition rates are very high, I think, compared to other public institutions, and they're more consistent, although in some cases somewhat lower, than private institutions around the country.
So as a hybrid, you're kind of right in between.
Right.
Then a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. We talked about faculty salaries. Again, the qualifier of a similar institution. How do faculty salaries compare in institutions engaged in the same sort of work?
Our goal, which we don't always achieve, is to pretty much shoot for the 50th percentile nationally. And the tendency is for us to slip way behind in people who have been at the institution for quite a while because we haven't been increasing salaries very much. But we try to make sure the 50th percentile or the 50th percentile for the Western institutions is where we target our salaries. So we're not high. I know that that when it's reflected in the newspaper, it looks like a very high number, but we are competing with the rest of the country for these individuals, and we have to be competitive. But we're able to use some of our geographical and other advantages in terms of recruiting to Oregon that other states don't have.
One more question. Thank you very much for your indulgence. You talked about closing the gap for the indirect costs, and I would suppose some for teacher salaries and some to mitigate tuition. I was just asked by a reporter, if I were king of the world, what would I do? And I did not like that question, but if you were king of the world and you were to set the legislature's commitment to OHSU, where would it be at?
What would it be? Well, that is a great question. I'm restraining myself. When I was recruited to OHSU in 1988, the state support for the institution was 27% of our total budget. The Board of Higher Education, of which we were part at that time, said, we want you to build OHSU, and we're going to do everything possible to increase the percent support the institution gets to 30% and hold it there while you grow. Now, I realize that was unrealistic, but I would like to see us be able... I wrote a letter to our faculty around early December of this year saying I thought we had hit the bottom. I thought that the state economy was turning around. I thought we were actually part of turning the state economy around, and that I would hope that we would be able to get inflationary adjustments on our base budget this coming year. Then the governor's budget came along, and I think the perception is we're doing so well, but it's not, I don't think it's been clear how our budget is not fungible. We cannot move funds around any more than we are. So I guess I would say that if I had my druthers, it would be that we would be able to form a solid base from which we could plan for the future and adjust according to inflation as necessary there, and maybe at some point in the future look again at a special opportunity that would present itself. I think the tobacco settlement money was something special that comes along only rarely, and I think a great deal of benefit will be achieved as a result of that. But we are not asking for huge disproportionate increases of any sort, but we would like to be able to be stable and be able to build and give our faculty some assurance that they're getting a base of support that they can count on for the future. For example, we've had to do all sorts of internal things to adjust, where we have frozen people's discretionary accounts as part of the morale problem that we have. We have added some internal taxes. All of this is the result of less money coming to us from the state appropriation. So we would like to be able to form a base from which to build.
So, one more, with your indulgence. Then what I heard you say to me is, Representative Bowen, stability is almost as important as the quantity of the raise. So stability is really what you're looking for.
Quantity has a place, but stability is very important, yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. All right. And please continue.
Okay, as I said, I'm Dan Dorsa, Vice President for Research, and my slides actually in your handout just follow right on Dr. Kohler's presentation. I have two responsibilities that are relevant to this presentation. One is the investment and trying to shepherd the investment of the Oregon Opportunity Dollars that were provided to OHSU, the $200 million of public investment, which, as you are aware, is also being matched by $300 million in private investment being raised by the OHSU Foundation. The other responsibility I have is for the Office of Technology Transfer and their handling of our intellectual property, which flows from our research enterprise. And so I'm going to talk about both of those aspects. Next slide, please. In terms of the $200 million, one of the major investments that is being made that Dr. Kohler referred to is in new space. And this is desperately needed, new research space on the hill. The little diagram here, this watercolor, shows you actually in the middle here the new building that is being created. It's a fantastic building, 250,000 square feet of new research space, including a new advanced imaging research center, which will have some of the highest field MRI magnets in the country. and desperately needed infrastructure for other kinds of research. I want to point out this building lies right in between the biomedical, the basic science aspect of the campus over here where our Volum Institute and other institutes are, and the clinical side of the campus over here, and actually will be connected to the clinical campus by a sky bridge. And we're going to have patients as well as basic science kinds of research going on in this building. And this is important because relevant to the question that was asked previously, the NIH is moving a lot of its money into what is called translational research. NIH is trying to foster the rapid movement of basic science discoveries to treatment. This is the entire emphasis, and a lot of the money is being earmarked, if you will, at NIH for this purpose. And so OHSU is positioning itself by virtue of creating this building and recruiting people who are going to be focused on translation to be highly competitive for those dollars. Next slide, please. Just to update on where we are, we had anticipated 71 new investigators being recruited and supported by the Oregon Opportunity, and this just shows you from 2002 to 2007 the progress we've made on that. And in fact, what it's showing you is that we are in fact anticipating we're going to be able to exceed that because of judicious use of the money in terms of the size of recruitment packages that we were able to negotiate, and some matching money that has been able to be identified from the foundation and other sources. So we actually think we're going to be able to exceed the 71 by 07, and you can see we're sort of plateauing a little bit here in terms of where we are, and that's what is being driven by our space problem, which is why we absolutely need that building and other buildings which are online to open so that we can follow through on the recruitment process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. Could you tell us, of those 71 PIs, what's the average amount of grant money they bring with them?
When we model this, we expect when they come in the door, most of our recruitments have been senior recruitments and or at least mature recruitments. And these individuals come with at least one federal grant, usually about, in total, about $350,000, about $200,000 to $250,000 of that being direct costs, and about $100,000 being indirect costs, and that's an average size grant. When we model this, we expect that when they're in place, in their space, and so forth, they will have at least two grants, being around $600,000 that they're bringing in and supporting themselves and the other people that they employ in their laboratory.
Thank you.
These are some names of individuals who have been recruited, and I'm not going to go through the whole list. I just want to point out some highlights and say that the places we're recruiting these people from are the best in the country. Johns Hopkins, we've rated pretty effectively on the top here in terms of Jeffrey Kirsch, who is our chief of anesthesiology, who brought some very high-end investigators with him and immediately converted our anesthesia department from being sort of unranked in this area to be one of the highest-ranked departments in the country in terms of federal funding. David Jacoby also came from Hopkins and is head of our pulmonary and critical care unit. Jung Yu in orthopedics just recruited from Case Western, a really fantastic recruitment, excellent clinical recruitment, and brings with it a very high-end research program in stem cell research. Steve Hansen, I want to point to. Steve was recruited from Emory University and is heading our new biomedical engineering program, and I'm going to refer to him later at the end of my presentation. And we're also recruiting in other schools in dentistry, nursing, and so forth. And so I think the impact of these recruitments is quite high. Next slide. One of the aspects, it was understood that the Oregon Opportunity should not just have an impact in the Portland area or in the immediate region. It should have a statewide impact, and that is being carried out through the creation of something called the Oregon Rural Practice-Based Research Network, or ORPRN. This is a statewide deployment of infrastructure for the conduct of research in primary practice and in family practice settings throughout the state. And the mission, obviously, is to improve the health of rural Oregonians by conducting research in partnership with communities and rural practitioners that they serve. Next slide. Now, this is also a grant-generating entity now. It's actually writing grants. We have investigators who are involved in it, who are also using it as infrastructure for the kind of research and the kind of grants they can write. Right now, we're being highly successful. 70% of the grants that have been written through OPRIN have actually been funded. At least $2 million in federally funded research has now been brought in, and those dollars actually stay in the communities that are involved in these programs. Also, some state dollars have come into this test bed as well. Next slide. 27 practices in 23 rural Oregon communities are involved, 120 clinicians serving 150 rural patients, 60% family physicians, 7% general and internists, and so forth, as you can see. Next slide. This is a diagram showing you the deployment of the various aspects of OPRIN. The OPRIN offices, where we have site coordinators and so forth, are in places like Lincoln City, Klamath Falls, LeGrand. And then the practices that are involved are also shown. So you can see it actually is a statewide network. It's one of only six in the nation, by the way, that has been established. And so we think this has been a tremendous development. Okay, I'm at the last part of my talk, and this deals primarily with our efforts to commercialize the technology and the intellectual property flowing from our research efforts. This just shows you the impact, if you will, and outreach of our technology transfer efforts. In 1989, OHSU had $41 million per year in research funding, and as you heard just recently, we're at about $250 plus million dollars in 04. The inventions in 89 that had been disclosed to our office were 64, and now we're at 747. Cumulative patents, we've gone from 11 to 300 patents that have actually been issued to OHSU. Licenses, 230. Licensing income went from 800,000 and over that period 11 million in total. And actually what I think is a quite impressive number of spin-off companies that have come from our technologies, 6 and 89, and a total of 51 as of 04. We are spending a lot of money on commercialization efforts. This just shows you what we spend on our operating budget for the technology transfer activities that we are engaged in, just under $1 million a year. And then we have about $1 million a year or so in legal expenses, which is primarily patenting and other costs associated with protecting the intellectual property for OHSU and for the state of Oregon. Next slide. This shows you a summary of a number of the parameters that spin out of the office in terms of licenses signed, non-clinical sponsored research agreement, technology material transfer agreements, and startups and so forth. I just want you can see that things are really picking up here between 2000 and 2004. And this is, I think, a result of two things. One is the emphasis that Dr. Kohler put on this as an important function of OHSU's activities, and secondly, the impact of the Oregon opportunity. Next slide. This is licensing revenue and also award from sponsored research agreements, and it's showing you that our licensing revenue is going up just over $1 million, $1.2 million. And the red bars are actually research agreements coming in from outside the state from private entities and from industry to fund research. So these are dollars that are flowing in, about $2.5 million a year coming in through these kinds of agreements. So if I take how this process normally occurs and diagram it here for you, what it shows is that for 2004, the $260 million in that year resulted in 105 disclosures, that is scientists showing up at the door of our technology transfer office saying, I've got an idea, I don't know if this has any value, do you think we ought to patent this, so forth. We had 8 issued patents that year. Now, that, of course, comes from previous applications for patenting, probably 4 or 5 years before that. So there's a lag period there. We did 43 licenses, which was the highest number we had ever done, and in that year created seven new companies that were spin-outs of our technology. Next slide. And this just takes you back in history in terms of the spin-out companies that have come from OHSU and OHSU and OGI after the merger. And what you can see is that up until about 2002, 2003, we were doing about 1 to 3 companies per year, and over the last 2 years, we've actually seen a pretty significant acceleration in that, having 6 companies spun out in 2003 and 7 in 04. And I want to talk about the companies that are in that 04 bin there in the next slide, I think. Just to give you a flavor for the kind of companies that are coming from our technologies. And what I want to direct your attention to is the fact that it's frequently thought that because we are primarily a health sciences institution, or have historically been, that the only kind of technology that comes out of OHSU really is drug-related or hardcore biotechnology kind of technology, and that is absolutely not true. We do some of that, but we also do much more than that. For example, on the top, Advanced Psych Systems is a behavioral health care software company, basically, that came out of one of our departments, Benson McFarland, actually in psychiatry. Our psychiatry department is the lead on that. Agilus Medical is actually a device company. It comes out of our Neurological Sciences Institute. It deals with creation of devices which are useful in the rehab and stroke. RTL Immunotherapeutics, very interesting example. It's a spin-out of technology of our neurology department. It has to do with MS, multiple sclerosis-related technologies, and drug development. The nice thing about this one is that it hit the ground running and actually has raised $11 million from venture capital outside the state that has come in to support this company. It is an Oregon company, and it's going to stay here in Oregon. BioSpeech comes out of OGI. It's a cutting-edge language and technology development company. Columbia Biotechnology develops new pharmaceuticals for cosmetical therapies. Nayeet is the last two are important, and I'll stop after that. Nayeet comes out of Mark Slifka's lab, and this is actually a recruitment under the Oregon Opportunity that came to VGTI. Mark is a very entrepreneurial guy, and he's developing new ways to detect bioterrorism-related agents, and he's getting support from DOD and other things, and DARPA money. Finally, Revitus is actually Steve Hansen's company, and it deals with the development of new drugs and new ways to treat thrombosis. So the point is, I think that this process is accelerating, and I think the last two examples show you that the kind of people we're trying to recruit with the Oregon Opportunity are the kind of people who think about commercialization and want to engage in it and create new companies and jobs. And I'll stop there.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the startup companies go out into the world and hit the ground running, et cetera, what is the financial benefit to OHSU? Is a percentage of their revenue contributed back to the university?
In some cases, there is licensing. So there's a license of the technology. In some cases, there is a cash remuneration for that. Unfortunately, with most nascent startups, they are not in a position to have a lot of cash to be able to support that license. And so frequently, we receive equity in the company, anywhere between 2% and sometimes up to 15% of the initial founder's equity in the company. To get that started.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
Is there a mechanism in any of the contracts that would, if any of these companies should happen to become, you know, fantastically successful, is there a mechanism that would continue revenue back to the university?
Yes, most of these licenses are written on the basis of milestones, and so the initial transfer of either cash or equity will ramp up depending on achievement of those milestones with the technology. And so in the case you get a big hit, somebody is successful with that technology, and they make a lot of money, frankly, some of that does continue to return to OHSU and to the state.
Very good. Thank you.
Right. Representative Riley.
I'm curious about the companies. I know that you're only counting the ones that you're licensing. Is that correct?
That's right.
And but there are other companies that start up. I'm not sure if my friend Richard Sessions' company is one of them. He was the administrator of the Bible Institute, and he has a new company that he's a principal in. And is that?
That's Zenomics, I think. Is this the Zebrafish company?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually, well, it is. It was not founded on OHSU technology because it was founded on a recruitment that came to the volume which had pre-existing intellectual property.
Right.
But our position on that was, well, he actually has now come here. He's going to be developing newer technologies and Zenomics, Rich and Roger Cohn, who's the lead scientist in that, recognize that, and so they've actually given some equity to OHSU. They're inhabiting space that we're cobbling together for them to incubate them and so forth. So they're very close to us, but they were not initially founded in our town.
Oh, so you don't count them as part of?
Well, they're actually in my list. I think deeper down.
Okay.
I count everything I can.
Thank you very much. Can I take you back to the rural practice-based research network for one question? The information you provided describes that some of the work is to specify the needs and issues related to healthcare delivery and access to care. Will there be a report provided at some point by OHSU in terms of what's happening in our counties on those issues?
Sure. That's some of the research projects themselves actually have a focus in that area, and there will be papers that will come from that, and also I think reports can be provided about the results. But they're really based on research projects that are either federally funded or state funded. And if they're state funded, there certainly will be reports.
Is there any particular timeline for that?
I don't have a good number to give you. I assume that probably within a year there'll be progress on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
My name is Steve Statham. I'm Chief Administrative Officer for OHSU, and I would like to briefly talk to you about the South Waterfront Project. I know we're short on time, and I have a number of slides, but a lot of them are pictures, so I will go quickly. The South Waterfront Project is really critical to our future from the standpoint that we are really out of space on Markham Hill, as most of you know if you've been up there. And with the two buildings coming online, the biomedical research building and the new patient care facility, we are essentially out of space up there. So the South Waterfront is key for us in terms of capacity to have additional lab space and clinical space. And we also view it as kind of a new front door for OHSU. Because, again, OHSU is not that accessible with the Markham Hill topography. But I want to talk more about the economic development impacts very briefly for you. First of all, I'll give you a brief overview and then talk to you about OHSU's role as a catalyst and describe some of the current projects. Just to give this some context, most of you are probably familiar with this project, but it is a 130-acre area just south of downtown. It is located within an urban renewal area, and it has 1.2 miles of Willamette River frontage, and it is the last major redevelopable area within the central city. And the city planners view this as kind of the other central city bookend to the Pearl District. It is certainly strategically located for us and for the economic development benefits because of its connections to Lake Oswego, Markham Hill, Portland State, and downtown Portland. And this is an aerial view that kind of orients you. The South Waterfront and Markham Hill are less than a mile apart as the crow flies, but they are 15 to 35 minutes of travel time on the road system. So it's very close geographically. It's just that the connection is not that great on the road system. Thanks, Dean. The vision for the South Waterfront District is a mixed-use neighborhood with OHSU anchored as a central, having a central city campus between Markham Hill and South Waterfront, and the foundation of a bioscience and technology quarter that includes OHSU, Portland State, OMSI, and private entities that we think we'll see there. quite a bit of housing and jobs, as Dr. Kohler mentioned previously. We also expect to have educational collaborations with Portland State, Oregon State, and other higher ed institutions there. This may be the first place where several higher ed institutions physically come together that we've ever had in Oregon, I think. A lot of green space there. It's sort of an offset to fairly tall urban-style building development. Multimodal transportation, including the tram, the streetcar, a lot of innovative ways to get people in and out of that district, as well as Markham Hill. And, of course, the connectivity of OHSU actually connecting to the rest of the city. Right now, Markham Hill is a little bit of an island surrounded by a lot of trees. And I think this is really significant for Portland and Oregon that OHSU will be getting off the hill in addition to what we have in the West Campus, but in Portland, in downtown Portland. We expect to see an anchored OHSU-anchored conference center hotel there. We generate a lot of conference activity, and so the need for that is pretty significant. And this has a very high focus on sustainable development. It's a very environmentally positive story, what's happening down in the South Waterfront. I won't go through all this history. Suffice to say that up until recently, this has been an industrial area, and in the last, since World War II, has really been an underdeveloped industrial area. As you drive by it, you can see there's not much there except some warehouses and the Zidell barge facility. This is a picture in 1912. It will be more attractive when this redevelopment occurs. We have played the role as a catalyst to this project. We did this for space expansion and access purposes, but we knew that we would be a catalyst to this. Our involvement, which has really been based on $44 million of OHSU's own revenue bonds that were issued in 2002, has leveraged about $300 million worth of housing development, about $70 million to date, and there will be more of public investment in infrastructure. This district has virtually no infrastructure. It had essentially no roads other than Moody Avenue. It did not have a functioning electric grid, and the road access, although it will be better than Markham Hill, needs a lot of improvements, as you know, when you navigate with the Ross Island and Markham bridges. This will produce several thousand construction jobs and is already producing many of those in phase one. So I want to explain, we own two parcels in South Waterfront. The first parcel is 8 acres of the 31-acre central district, which is immediately south of the Ross Island Bridge, and that is where the current development activity is occurring. The second parcel is approximately 20 acres that we own between the Ross Island and Markham Bridges, which were donated to us by the Schnitzer family last year, which was one of the largest gifts in Oregon history. And that will be the home of a future academic campus that we expect to integrate a lot of our academic programs and probably see other institutions there as well. This animated diagram shows where the central district is, just south of the Ross Island Bridge, and the space between the this space right here is the Schnitzer campus. This is the central district, and this is the connection the tram will have right here to Markham Hill. And this is just a map showing those blocks. We own the four blocks that are sort of in purple here. Residential developers own some of these blocks. This will be a park. This will be parking garages on which affordable housing and probably some student housing will be developed. Just to give you a quick overview of current projects, OHSU's first building, which we are currently calling Building 1, although we will come up with a better name at some point, is a 400,000-square-foot building that is mostly clinical space and educational and research on top of that. It's a $145 million project that is mostly financed by our practice group that Dr. Kohler alluded to. That is not part of the OHSU financial accounting. Their revenues and expenses are separate. Those are our faculty members as they see patients in their clinical practice. That project is under construction, will be completed in September of 2006. The Merriweather is two condominium towers that, if you drive by I-5, you see them. They're under construction right now. Another very significant project. The streetcar is being extended to Gibbs Street. It has just been extended from Portland State to River Place, and it is going to continue on to Gibbs Street, which is where our building is. And the Portland Aerial Tram and related neighborhood improvements, including a pedestrian bridge that will connect the CTLH, Corbett Lair Hills, Williger neighborhood to this district. They've been cut off by the freeways and McAdam Avenue. Those projects will also be completed in the fall of 2006, except the pedestrian bridge is going to just begin design work. It has not been, the construction has not quite started, and it will probably be a year or two before construction starts on that. There are other housing projects, the John Ross and the Block 34 condo project will probably both break ground this year. And you may have seen in the paper the other day, Trammell Crow has announced an apartment project to go in what's called Block 39. All of these are block numbers that are close to our first building. A neighborhood park is being developed. The Portland Development Commission has acquired the land for that, which is currently a mini storage facility. A lot of road work is being done right now, as well as the initial greenway improvements. The area looks like it's being completely torn up because so much infrastructure had to be put in. Along with all of this, the Portland Big Pipe Project, the sewer overflow has been constructed during this, so it's been a very complex construction environment. This is a rendering of our first building, which we're very excited about, and I'm going to show you a few pictures of it because this building sailed through the Portland Design Review project, and it's an environmentally friendly building that will have a very good energy savings system associated with it. This shows you a view from coming down from the tram system right next to this first building of OHSU's. This is the corner of Gibbs Street, where right next to where the tram will land, and that portion right there is an atrium, the opening of the building. This is a picture of it at night. The programs that will be in this building include a wellness center that will be open to the public for both fitness activities and rehabilitation, healthy lifestyle and coaching activities. OHSU Hospital will have an ambulatory surgery center and other programs. The medical group will have several clinics where you can see your doctor and get care there. We will have the OSU College of Pharmacy. It has a Portland campus currently on Markham Hill, a Portland connection on Markham Hill that will be located in this building. So Oregon State will be in this building with us. And our biomedical engineering program that Dr. Dorsa mentioned will have a significant presence in this first building. I mentioned sustainable development. I won't go through all these, but we are very proud of the efforts to have this building be a set a high standard for sustainable development, which will save us money over the years in terms of energy savings. This is just a picture of the Merriweather buildings, those condominium buildings that are being constructed right now. The John Ross building, which is under design and will break ground in May, I believe, is going to go on 35. That's a depiction of that building. The Greenway has gotten a lot of attention, and I won't spend a lot of time on it with you, but Portland's vision is to have a Greenway trail system connecting all the way down to really the Selwood Bridge. And this will be an important link to that, and a lot of design work has gone on with the City of Portland to make this pedestrian-friendly to people, but also to restore habitat for fish. This is just a depiction of the Greenway. Our involvement, just to summarize that, we acquired property in 2002, and then we received a donation in 2004. Building 1 is primarily financed by the medical group, although OHSU is contributing some funds to that building, and we are contributing funds to the road, streetcar, tram, and street system improvements. This is the largest economic development project in Portland's history at over $2 billion. We have served primarily as a catalyst to the development, although the first building will be very important for us. This will be the home to thousands of new jobs. It will be a transit hub and a housing center and the future home to our academic campus. We also expect to see OSU, Portland State, and other institutions with programs in the district. And that is simply a rendering of South Waterfront in 2015. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you happen to have a virtual tram ride in your computer?
We have one. I didn't bring it with me today. I wish I had, now that you've asked that. Sometimes that particular DVD doesn't play very well on these, so we tend to use the VCR. But if you want one, we can send it to you. We did this for the Architectural Foundation of Oregon dinner a couple of years ago. The tram will connect Markham Hill to South Waterfront in basically in a 2.5 minute, two minute 40 second ride, which is really critical for patients and families and visitors, but also our faculty who go back and forth between their labs and seeing patients and teaching classes every day. That's why it has been so important to us. It's the connectivity that the tram provides. The tram will break ground probably in June this year. They're just wrapping up the construction documents right now.
The reason I know about this, Mr. Chair, is I belong to the what is it called now? I call it the Wives Club. I was the first male member, so these folks, my wife works for these folks, so I have to be very careful here.
Right. Any other questions? Okay. And concerning the Meriwether building,
yes.
You mentioned here already 80% has been sold.
Yes.
What's the average price for the condo?
You know, I'm not sure. They are fetching pretty high prices. I think that they range between $200,000 and $1 million because there's a range of sizes. But I don't know if I have the average price. They are selling very well, and the John Ross is expected to sell very quickly. It's very important to emphasize that the goal here, though, is to have mixed levels of housing in the district, not all for people who can afford the high-end housing. We have a lot of employees who are very interested in housing, and not all of them can afford the high-end housing. In fact, a survey was done, and an astonishing number of our employees said they would at least be interested in looking at housing there, which would be great from improving commutes and at least minimizing congestion impacts. But the first project is getting a lot of attention from the housing market. But I don't know the price ranges.
Okay. And in this project, I read that you are collaborating with PSU and University of Oregon. How are you going to collaborate together?
Well, Oregon State University has a pharmacy program that is really a joint program with OHSU. The last 2 years of their four-year program, they spend up on Markham Hill, and it's more clinically focused. And that program, the last 2 years, will be in our first building. So Oregon State will actually have its program in our first building in South Waterfront. Portland State, we have lots of partnerships with Portland State that Dr. Dorsa and Dr. Halleck, our provost, could speak to, but we will be a short streetcar ride away, and including from their engineering building, their new engineering building. And currently there are no programs of Portland State's that will actually be in our first building, but we expect that to evolve over time because we're going to be very close transportation-wise.
So is this the beginning of merging OHSU and PSU?
No, it's the continuation of more partnerships.
I was supposed to ask that, Mr. Chair. I was told to ask that by another representative. Yeah.
May I answer?
Of course.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, we see a virtual university as the answer to the question rather than a merger at this point in time, as you probably know.
Okay, it looks like a big economic engine in this, especially Portland metro area, being the fourth largest employer in the state. Maybe with this one, maybe one of the top two, maybe.
Could be. Yes. Can I add something?
Sure.
In the economic development lines, as you think about things that could be done in the future, one of the problems that we occasionally run into is a federal program that requires a state match. And, for example, when the biodefense grants were let,
One of the requirements was that the state come up with a quarter of the amount of money, or the institution applying for this come up with a quarter of the amount of money, and that this be absolutely firm in the views of the federal government. We wanted to apply for one of these, and we actually did. And the governor actually wanted to try to help, but was told by his staff he could not commit money. We believe that some of the money could have been raised privately or in other ways if, in fact, there had been an opportunity to do that. But these come so quickly that if there were some sort of quick access to a match that could assure the success of a grant, which might have only a three-month time to which you could apply, that would allow us, I think, for example, that would have been cited. We did about $1 million worth of preparation work to cite that in the Primate Center campus. That would have been a big, big asset to this state and to our research programs.
And to Washington County.
And Washington, yes. Washington and Texas and Boston got the big ones. So this is not anything right now that's immediately important to us, but I think if there were some way for the Economic Development Committee or people in the state to look at quick ways to respond that might not need to be anything more than a guarantee, I think it could allow a lot of additional build out of our research programs here. We knew, for example, for a lot of reasons, that Texas was probably going to get one of these, but they do have ways to move money quickly to create a match that then allows their grant to be successful. So I just plant that as an idea for you. At some point in the future, perhaps another one of these will come up, and we will have to respond rapidly with some guarantee, and that's really the request.
Okay.
How much dollar amount are we talking about, approximately, for the match?
I think this was $6 million.
It was $6 million, yeah.
That we needed for that particular proposal. I mean, they're going to be variable, but there were two programs. One was a national biodefense laboratory that was a much larger one, and then a regional laboratory. And the $6 million was the match for the regional, which we thought logically we could get. We have the Primate Center. We have a lot of expertise in that area. But we needed to be able to say with assurance that we could match the federal money if it came through.
It has to be a grant, or could we match by the lottery money or a bond, things like that?
I think it could be anything that could just be viewed as solid backup for the proposal. Okay. I'm not sure that any one form of guarantee would be any better than another, but it would have to be presumably coming from the House and have to be done rapidly.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Representative Bellum?
Yeah, I'm very interested in how Texas does this. Can you send me somewhere? I think that we should have a quick response fund, my term. I'd like to know more how Texas does this.
Well, I believe the way Texas does it is they have an endowment that was created by the oil reserve money that is more flexible they can use. But Texas was not the only state that did this. Massachusetts did as well, and Washington had some way also. And Dr. Dorsa, actually, we recruited away from Washington. Maybe you can answer how they did it. Do you know?
Well, the facility that they're competing for is actually a less expensive facility than the one we were trying to compete for. There were national biocontainment facilities, and there were regional ones. They're actually doing the regional one right now, which is a match of probably more like $1 million to $2 million. And to be honest, I was just up there, and I'm not quite sure they know how they actually are going to come up with the money. I think they said, we have the money, and I'm not sure that it's fungible at the moment.
I'm very interested in establishing what kind of a fund.
Well, Dr. Jim Stembridge, our administrator, I'd like to make a comment.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention that when you and I first started working on this 8 years ago, we were, at your request, we looked into some of the big industries in Oregon, some of the bigger economic activities in Oregon that would not be so subject to the cycles of the economy. When you look at wood products, which are so dependent upon national construction, one of the reasons why in the over the last several decades, Oregon has been one of the first states that has gone into recession when the country goes into recession. And most recently, with our growing dependence on higher technology, when that sector of the national economy had trouble in the last few years, Oregon again was taken into a recession more quickly. One of the economic activities that Oregon is prominent in, which is not subject to these cyclical problems, is healthcare and healthcare research, and that is one of the things that Oregon Health and Sciences University has been. It's Oregon State Day today, isn't it?
It is. That was appropriate.
Got Oregon State on my mind. Oregon Health and Sciences University has been prominent in that field. Of course, it's extremely prominent in the state of Oregon, but it is also prominent nationally. And one of the reasons that our recessions have not been greater than they have been.
Thank you very much
for your comment. And before you go, in the presentation, they mentioned OHSU is the number one in Portland metro area and the statewide, the fourth largest employer. And what groups, what companies are ahead of you, three of them? Who are they? Do you have any idea?
Intel and Nike. I think Intel and Nike. At least Intel in the Portland metro area. But
okay.
I don't know.
I think on a statewide basis,
statewide.
Fred Meyer might be, and I don't believe Nike is because I think so much of their manufacturing is done somewhere
Intel.
Else. But I think the Providence system statewide, when you add everything together, may be up there also.
Okay.
By the way, another health-related activity.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nelson, as soon as you come in, you have a question.
Yes, it was so nice of you to invite me.
Thank you.
Chair Lim, thank you. Sorry, I was down trying to protect the small business.
That's what I heard.
330,000 of them.
Okay.
Who started out little like we did, right, Doctor? Chair Lim and Dr. Kohler, I believe it was last session, I may be wrong, maybe in the session before, but I had asked you, one of my greatest concerns with OHSU is that you do this fabulous research, you come up with a cure for breast cancer and a cure for leukemia, and but then we're not able to, or else we don't respond as a state quickly enough to keep the manufacturer of the pharmaceutical in our state. And I recall from that previous one, I was really sad. We started out with it here and then it ended in Germany. Not that I have anything against Germans. Could you tell us, I said, I promised to support your facility expansion if you'd promise to keep those jobs here and let us be the manufacturer. Is it because our state trade and economic development group didn't hop to it and say, we'll help fund that manufacturing?
It's a combination of factors, and we are working very hard on this. As a matter of fact, right now our current problem is wet laboratory space availability. Now, having the right kind of laboratories available for these little companies to go into. We are working very hard, and Mr. Stater may want to comment more on this, with a company. This is how, when you get something going, good things sort of add on to that. I would use Dick Sessions' company as sort of a halo-related activity to what goes on at OHSU. There is a company in California looking at building a building that would house laboratory space in it on the waterfront next to or near to our buildings. That is, in fact, what we need right now. We need that kind of, this is like a hotel for laboratories in a way. We need that kind of space. Steve, do you want to comment on that?
Well, just to say that this is a company that, this particular company has done this kind of thing in the Bay Area and in Boston and even in Seattle. So I think it's a good sign that they are confident in the research capacity of OHSU, but of course we haven't made a binding agreement with them yet. We're also exploring pretty actively both with Marty Brantley in the state as well as in our federal efforts securing funding for incubator funds for bioscience companies, incubator or accelerator facilities to take these spin-off companies and be able to grow them in space that is affordable for them, because this lab space is not cheap, and unless there is some funding mechanism like that, they typically can't afford the rent in these types of facilities. So we're actively pursuing that. Dan, you may want to also comment.
Yeah, in addition, the particular breast cancer related technology you're referring to was a situation where not having Oregon focused venture capital was a real problem.
Yeah.
Because the Bay Area took a look at it, saw the potential. There's now $30+ million of venture capital funding in that company. We have some of the research still going on here at OHSU and Gail Clinton's laboratory, but what that leads to is the venture capitalists want it down the street so they can walk in there and see, go in at 5 o'clock and see whether there's anybody working or not, and they don't want to get on a plane to come up to Portland to do that. So it's a combination of venture capital and the space requirement, which is very real, and we need a partnership, frankly, to create that space, and we also need a commitment for Oregon-focused venture capital. Now, the PERS money and the investment in Credit Suisse, which is underway, I know that there's some decision going on. I'm deeply hopeful that the decisions that come out of that are going to result in some investment in some local knowledgeable people who are interested in working with us on these companies. I've got one coming out the door right now that is a diagnostics company, exactly the same position. They're sending me email saying, we're desperate for lab space. We want to stay in Portland. We have people who want to invest in us in San Francisco. We've got to convince them to stay here. And they currently probably have, they're still small, they probably have about 30, 40 employees, but they have a big business plan. They're a diagnostic company, and so their time to market is very short.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're looking at, 2-3 years of further development before they've got a product. And, this is a real challenge for us. So we can continue to spin these companies out at a higher and higher rate, but if we don't do something downstream, and frankly that's not something OHSU can do on its own, we're going to continue to have a problem.
Mr. Chair?
One follow-up.
Boy, I've been restricted. That'll teach me to be late. I am so proud of you. I want you to know that. So is there any way that we could ask you when these issues come up with these Californians, Washingtonians, and the international groups, that our committee could know about this, because there is absolutely no reason why we're not putting trade and economic development monies into these programs. I said it, whatever, 6 years ago or whatever it was, and I'm saying it again today. I just keep following this and I keep asking, and you've just proved to me that we're not stepping up to the plate. I mean, this is every bit, if not more, important than Cascade Locks to this state. So I hope the governor's listening.
Dave, I would be more than happy to apprise this committee of all of these situations.
Thank you.
All right. And since there's no more question, is there any other person like to testify on this OHSU and the Oregon economy? And hearing none, and we are going to close a public.
Oh,
thank you. Just come on up. Yeah. Okay. Welcome, Mr. Buttrick.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
My name is Richard Buttrick, Associated Oregon Industries, and I had not planned on testifying today, and particularly following the presentation that you all received, but since I was asked, Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple of words. We believe, and the business community believes, that OHSU, its research capability, in fact, we have some personal experience with that. One of my colleagues was helped by OHSU. We believe in the statewide nature of their outreach. We believe that the benefit for every citizen in the state is enhanced, and this goes way beyond just the jobs that are being offered now, which are significant in Portland and the state. My guess is, Mr. Chairman, you're right. With the next plans for OHSU that they have, it probably will be number two, let's say, in total employees in a few years. The innovation on the South waterfront is going to be a magnet for the United States and the world, for Portland, and therefore for the rest of the state. I think it's absolutely critical that we also ask you and the Ways and Means committees and the co-chairs of Ways and Means to take a second look at the governor's budget as it relates to the cuts that are in there. Many of us are concerned about health care generally, in particular the cost of health care. If we cut out nursing, nursing is going to be more and more expensive, which is going to get added on to the bill. It has been said that, correctly, that the community colleges are doing a good job at training nurses too, but they're training nurses that are RNs in 2 years. The people that are training the two-year nurses are the ones that come out of OHSU with a four-year degree. And so if we cut off supply of trained nurses at that level, not only just a Bachelor of Arts, but perhaps Master's degrees, and Dr. Halleck, the PhDs, we will be making a short-term gain and saving money, but it's going to be penny-wise and pound-foolish as far as AOI is concerned. So I may say, Mr. Chairman, the presentation you're asking for this presentation today is high-minded, important. The facts speak for themselves, and as far as AOI is concerned, we would be happy to help in any way we can with your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attention. Ralph, come on up.
I feel like I'm in church.
You might start with confession then, shouldn't you?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, on behalf of organized labor, my name is Ralph Groner with AFSCME. For those of you who don't know who we are, it's American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. I may have a special interest. I want to thank you for holding this hearing, and I particularly want to thank Representative Nelson for saying that these wonderful folks ought to come in front of you. I only want to add a couple of points. My friends in the trades, electrical, carpentry, the trades. The friends Representative Scott here works with, and Representative Buckley. The fact is, their unemployment in this state is just astronomical. You may not know without Bob Shiprack in front of you just how bad it is, and even though you read in the Oregonian that jobs are on the increase, it hasn't been with the trades. We have, why am I saying this, 5,000, and if I'm wrong, Leslie Halleck will correct me, I hope, 5,500 construction jobs going on at the Hill now. And where I may differ from some, those folks are paying income tax to this general fund to support education, to support human services, and to support public safety. Those folks also are supporting their family. I have five tradespeople where I live surrounding me. Four of them are not, one is still home, broke. The other four, just so you understand what it's really like, are down in Las Vegas because they couldn't get work in Oregon working on the casino that's being built, or casinos. The governor, and I will say it to the governor, represents a very myopic view when it comes to a proven revenue generator for the state. The reason I wanted this in front of you is I'm one who believes in quid pro quo, scratch your back, I scratch mine. We put in, through our employees, almost 5,000 are my members, we put in $37 million, I'd rather say $74 million, into the general fund to support these programs, every biennium, with the growth. 6,000, I handed you a little flyer, new jobs. I can tell you that not only are we a local economic engine and a statewide engine, but we are what I have asked for nearly 30 years, the Revenue Committee in Oregon to do. Whenever someone's asking for a tax break, I would like to see someone show me the following year or the following year, how many jobs did you create? What was your stability? Did you provide, in my case, I'd like to know if you provided benefits. And I have a one-page sheet that everybody says it can't be done. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I love this organization because I can tell you something. OHSU can show you how many jobs have been created, can show you what the salary is, can show you what the income tax is paid into this general fund. No one else has done that. And the reason I come out in front of the Revenue Committee somewhat upset is I'm not against a tax break for small, big, anybody, brothers, sisters, relatives. I don't give a damn. The fact is no one has been required to say, oh, you give us a break. They all come in front since I was on Revenue Committee in the early 70s. Give us a break. We'll create jobs. Show me the money, honey. Show me the jobs. Now, I know I'm labor, and I feel strongly about this, but I do believe that you've got a track record with OHSU. This is a horse that's a winner. This is the trifecta. They've proven themselves. Why am I saying this? Thank you. We need to spread the message because we're looking to make sure we're funded decently from what the governor cut, and to be quite specifically, to replace that cut, because what we will do, no one else can do, is provide you $27 for every dollar, and that's in the letter I handed out, in either grants, service contracts, and income to the state. And are the second point and the last I'll make, Mr. Chair, is that it was alluded to lightly, but we are a stable workforce, relatively speaking, compared to other industries that go through the ups and downs of the economy. So it's a good investment. It's better than a good investment. In my opinion, it's the best investment that the state general fund tax dollars could go for. I would rather than give a lot of breaks away without knowing where they're going, say, hold it. Let's give them to OHSU. At least there I know I'm going to get jobs created, which are going to create income taxes for the general fund. I love each of you for having these folks here, and thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll file your presentation in our record. Okay, Representative Nelson.
Could I just ask one more question? Just one.
Okay, just one.
A good doctor and his staff.
Okay.
Both good doctors.
Yes, please.
Yes, very important, everybody. This is serious. Last night on public broadcasting was an incredible story of the use of the stem cells from the nose to the spine to restore use of limbs of paraplegics.
Mm-hmm.
It is incredible what is happening now. And I'd like to ask the good doctors if they're moving in that direction. It was unbelievable to watch those people. It was happened to be all women last night who had been paralyzed from car accidents, etc. And by these, they showed the process, the stem cells to the spine. And I wonder if we're there.
Dr. Dorsey is in charge of our research programs. We do have a stem cell center launched and actually will be in the building being built by the Oregon Opportunity Money. I'll let him comment further on that. Different people are looking at different parts of the stem cell spectrum. I mean, stem cells can do so many things, but ours are more focused right now on liver and cartilage, but there may be other areas. Dan?
Yes, we've established the Oregon Stem Cell Center. Dr. Marcus Grompe, who was a faculty member with us previous to this, and who was being recruited away actually by Stanford University using, you know, because of the money that California has laid out in this area. We retained Marcus, and he is the director of the center, and he is now recruiting for new faculty, four or five new faculty. Some of whom, two of which already who have been interviewed, who work exactly in this area of the use of stem cells for neural regeneration processes. So we intend to be a big player in this. Marcus's take on the world here of stem cells, by the way, is that he believes that you don't need to use embryonic stem cells for this purpose.
Right, they proved this last night.
You can use adult stem cells, and you can trick them chemically to turn into whatever you want. But in the case of the spinal cord, obviously neurons for neural regeneration. So we are completely committed to this. We're actively recruiting, and this is going into our new biomedical research building. And that's.
And could I ask, Charlene, if this is included in your budget? As was presented to the governor?
That is being funded currently by the Oregon Opportunity Dollars, which were already provided to us. So there really isn't a request for that, although my understanding is the governor has expressed an interest in this area, in at least his discussions of the budget, and we're not entirely clear what that means in terms of the commitment on the governor's part to provide additional funding for the effort.
Thank you very much. And I just want to thank you again for coming at the same time. And since we have Oregon health plan has been cut the last session, and that you have more citizens coming to your place for help. And I know the number has been increased, and we want to appreciate the work you are doing helping the most vulnerable people in our state. With that, I'd like to close a public hearing on the OHSU and the Oregon economy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'd like to open a public hearing on the House Bill 2886. And
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2886 adds an international transportation representative to the 15-member International Trade Commission. On the summary information that I gave to you, I did give you a list of the current members of the International Trade Commission and a little bit of information about what the commission does.
All right.
You want to ask Representative Nelson if she wants to start out, or do you want to ask
okay.
to start out?
Hold on. Yeah. Representative Nelson, you'd like to start out? This is your bill. You want to start out?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
Sorry. Am I? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. You want to start out? This is your bill?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
This is the summary. You got the bill.
Okay. I'm just going to talk to this.
Yeah.
You know, I was in the transportation business for many, many years with our largest home-owned aviation corporation. And when Governor Goldschmidt was here, I met with him and suggested that we have an intermodal hub at the Port of Portland. At that time, we had just started UPS operations in the air out of Louisville, then followed that up starting the United States Postal Service contract. And with that, then we became the second largest trucking company in the state of Oregon and in ground handling and movement by ground. So we had the opportunity to have shipping, working with Evergreen Shipping Lines, not affiliated, as you know, with Evergreen Aviation in McMinnville, but we had a working relationship. So we had water, air, sea, and also we categorize our many types of aviation service, I guess we should say, from helicopters, small, fixed wing to big ones. So what we were told, our crews could tell you flying from Hong Kong to the United States, they can tell you the balance of trade just by, you know, what they load in those airplanes, and it's always one-way traffic. So we were so impressed with the concept that we could increase business by providing a timely transportation service for the manufactured goods being received and leaving, that we expected to see a hub. Governor Goldschmidt, they beat me to Taiwan, but we followed him there, meeting with Evergreen Shipping Lines, and brought them here to McMinnville. With that, I just wanted to say that because to prove the point is we can have all the manufacturing, the best in the world. OHSU can produce the best pharmaceuticals for cures they come up with. But if we can't move it quickly,
to the individuals who need it, all the work is for naught. So in reviewing the membership of this International Trade Commission and also in numerous trade publications, what was pointed out to me prior to session as I was studying this is that the missing link is the transportation link. And somehow we just need to update our activities to what's current, the just-in-time inventories that are very important to people, but most importantly to the fact that without transportation, everything we do sits and there's a time constraint. So I felt it was very important to include transportation in this trade commission, and in the most of 178 countries that I've worked in over the past 30 years, nothing got there without transportation from the U.S., and nothing got here without some type of transportation. So for any type of trade mission organization, without transportation, we're missing the key to the success.
All right. And Craig?
Yes, just for the record, Chair Lim, my name is Craig Burke. I'm presently the Acting Director of the International Division of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and I'm here today on behalf of the division, also of the International Trade Commission. As you point out in your background sheet that you've passed among the committee members, the International Trade Commission was expanded in 2003 to include 15 representatives from the private sector, in addition to one ex officio representative each from the Senate and the House. And at present, the Commission includes three members who could be well termed as representatives of the international transportation business, and they are Mr. Gary Caldwell, who's CEO of Northwest Container Services, Mr. Sho Dozono, who's CEO of Azamano Travel, and Mr. Junki Yoshida, who's CEO of Yoshida Corporation and is a member of the Board of Directors of the Port of Portland. In addition, corporate responsibilities of two other commissioners, Mr. Carl Davis of Columbia Sportswear and Mr. Darrell Webb of Fred Meyer, are closely linked to international transport. Moreover, the recent activities of the commission have included work groups that have concentrated on various aspects of international trade. One of those work groups did concentrate on intermodal travel and transportation in general as related to international trade, and has produced a report that is included in our soon-to-be-published biennial report to be submitted to the legislature. So I'd like to emphasize that the Trade Commission does clearly recognize the importance of including a representative of the international transportation business as a member on the commission. And I can assure you, without reservation, you can safely assume that the representation of this industry will be continued. I should add that the members of the commission do have certain reservations about creating a permanent reserved seat for this industry on the commission. And there's a simple reason for that. There is the possible risk of establishing a precedent where other industries would request a permanent seat. For example, we might get the food processing say, well, we want our seat. We'd get certain high-tech sectors, and there are several of those who say, well, we should have a seat reserved for us. And it could go on and on. And I think that might go against a bit of creating a well-mixed, talented group of commissioners. And so we would have, you know, we would express that reservation about starting to grant permanent seats. Again, I'll emphasize, we do plan to keep representation, in fact, in more than one place on the commission to ensure that transportation is well represented.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Craig, for being here. I don't see any transportation people anywhere.
As I just mentioned, Gary Caldwell, who's CEO of Northwest Container Services, is a member of our...
I'm talking about transportation.
Oh, okay. These are transportation-related.
But they're not transportation, though. None of them.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example, Mr. Chair. Sho Dozono, we worked with for years. When we got the first operating authority to Maui, and he was one of our travel agents who worked with us in establishing the best service to Hawaii. But you have nobody in transportation. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about should we reserve a permanent spot, It's absolutely yes. There's no need to think that food processors are high tech or anything. They're no different than a category of market. I mean, there's not one group on here, one issue from CH2M Health Engineering to any of the others that relate to transportation, and you have to have it. You can't function without it. Trade and economic development is zero without transportation. And I'd be happy to bring all the publications that speak to this, so I'm a little astounded to hear that reasoning. We don't think transportation should be permanent. It seems ironic because you can't do anything without it.
Representative Nelson, I don't mean to minimize the importance or appear to minimize the importance of the transportation industry in this state and its importance to the state. We are very mindful of that. I think the fact that we've done a work group about intermodal transport testifies to the importance that we attach to the industry. I should also add, outside of the commission, we work very, very closely with the Port of Portland in planning our trade activities and planning the state's strategy for international business. And so I really can't emphasize too much how important this figures into our overall international strategy for the state.
Representative Dallam.
Are other members to the commission picked just on their present position, or are they picked because they represent certain segments of Oregon's economic engine?
I would say, from my experience, I've been working with the division for 8 years now, we will look for a mix of geographic representation, industry representation, without particularly fixing on any certain group. And also, of course, there's a very significant factor of talent. You know, who are good thinkers in terms of international strategy, who has the experience, and so that's obviously an important factor.
Mr. Chair?
Hold on. Yes, correct. Representative Riley.
Oh, I'll come back. If I could follow up now.
Yes.
One of the things that strikes me is the governor wants desperately to connect Oregon. It would be wonderful to connect Oregon, but we must connect it with the rest of the world. I'm not sure that I'm interested in identifying a person for transportation, but I have to concur with my colleague from McMinnville that I agree with the governor that we must have a logistics system that gets stuff out of here, and I do not see a direct shipper, and that does that's the blood veins. And in your mix, we have some indirect Mr. Alzamato with tourism, but we don't have a direct person that knows how to move goods and services in and around and out of Oregon. So the mix does trouble me a little bit.
Well, if I may respond to that, Representative Dallam, those are very good suggestions. I would suggest, and keep in mind that the terms of the commissioners, they're limited, they have 2-year terms and they're renewed. That's something we would definitely be open for discussion as far as the selection of new members the next time a place becomes open. So I would very much welcome input. I'm sure the commission would welcome input as to representatives from that, who would be good representatives from that sector.
One follow-up. In fact, as the policy center and as a representative of the Oregon people, I'm not sure that I wouldn't want to outline the membership of all members to ensure a good mix, particularly of rural Oregon. I see nobody there. I see agriculture, but it's tree fruit. And I don't know how long it's been since we've had a cattleman. So perhaps the legislature should exercise its prerogative and mandate that we have a mix of certain people so that it assures that all of Oregon is covered.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In looking at this list, I see with one we're attempting to add would be the first one, which is specifies a particular industry. Others come from the Trade Association, Port of Portland, come from the State Board of Agriculture, but this would be the first one that says we need someone from a particular business. And I see that as a little bit of a problem in allowing a little bit of latitude for appointment for the best folks from the state, no matter where they come from, what business they come from, and I believe that that's a not a good way for us to go at this point, in my opinion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berg, were you aware that we hosted a number of Koreans here who were interested in having cattle moved to Korea? It was an incredible opportunity. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
That's unfortunate, so that's probably why you don't see the need.
Can I just point out one thing, though, Representative Nelson?
Well, let me just finish
please.
We found the quarantine centers, you know, and one of them happened to be in Cruz Bay. But we have no shipping arrangement there. I mean, it's our own fault. We're losing business because we can't get in there. And so to not have somebody in the state, you know, pushing for that to happen, it meant a lot of jobs to Senator Verger and that whole area. It meant a lot to those the beef industry, and the sad thing, we have the quarantine center, but we just can't move them. So transportation is not a generic, or it's not a particular industry, it's generic. I mean, it fits every one of these. And you can't work without it. You can't have development without it, this type, internationally.
Representative Nelson, I don't deny that. It obviously is very important. There's absolutely no question about it. I would only ask that the commission be allowed to keep that in mind, make sure that it, as it moves ahead, that its membership does reflect the need for that sort of representation without necessarily starting to set reserved seats. One other thing I'd like to add is, if I seem slightly ignorant about the agricultural issue you mentioned, please keep in mind I do work for the Economic and Community Development Department, and we leave those sort of activities for the Department of Agriculture. So I don't mean to say I don't know, I don't care, just that that's usually handled by the Department of Agriculture.
Mr. Chair?
His point is well taken.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Well, it's not, Mr. Chair, it's not well taken with me. You were a part of that. Your whole organization was a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost. Oregon lost. And it was lose for the Koreans, and it was a loss for us. And you were very much a part of it. It did not relate. And if that's how we're thinking, we're not working together, that's exactly what's the matter with this department. There's something haywire when you're not receptive to somebody that is going to connect Oregon with the world, and you're not supporting all industries. That's trade and economic development doesn't say I'm just interested in manufacturing. It's everything, whether it's cows or mushrooms or wine. So I just think there's something haywire, and I'm hesitant to No, I'm not hesitant. I want to know, what's the matter? I mean, why are you being obstinate on this issue? Because it helps you.
I am simply expressing the consensus of the commission's opinions that was shared with me.
So who in the commission, excuse me, Mr. Chair, who in the in this Economic Development Department, what commissioners, which ones, did not want a transportation member? I would like to know.
I shared the bill, Representative Nelson, with the entire commission. The consensus, I would, and I must say, the unanimous opinion was that we already had the industry, in the way I've described it, represented well enough on the commission. So the entire commission.
Okay. All right.
I'd also like. Can I just want to add one other thing? You make a very good point about coordinating the efforts between agencies, between agriculture and economic development, the Port of Portland. We are moving ahead on that. We realize that something has been lacking. So, you know, please be assured that I recognize that very good point that you're making, Representative Nelson, and it's something that we're going to be addressing more comprehensively in the future.
Right, and. When we are discussing, it's got to be the friendly discussion. We don't need to badge anyone here. And Craig Burke is here representing the, not only could be his view, but his view come from the International Trade Commission. And I consider him as the messenger instead of talking of his own view. And so that in the future, that the, even though we are elected officials, we want to make sure we are very courteous to the member coming here. I'm not saying you are not, but I felt something I should mention at this time. So my question is, the representative Pacific Northwest International Trade Association. I have known them. Are they very active at this time?
I'm sorry, the International Trade Association?
Yes, Northwest International Trade Association.
We do have, they're represented because Gary Caldwell's with them. So we do have, we don't have them represented per se as, yes, there's somebody from that organization. But we have Gary Caldwell, who's with that group, and also, no, he would be the only one. But yeah, we're very mindful.
How active they are at this time?
You know, they're going through a transition with their absorption into the Portland Business Alliance, and I think that there's a transitional process that's taking place, but they are very active. Indeed, I chaired a presentation that they did on Central European markets just 6 weeks ago. So they are very active. They are also very active in terms of their lobbying efforts in Washington.
Okay. Since the member limit to 15, when someone, in case if this approved, coming up from the member of transportation business, then one person has to get off, then I guess.
Well, there are terms, and then people do leave. Right. For example, somebody might say, I've realized after serving for a couple of years, I'm just giving an example here, Mr. Chair, I don't have enough time to do this, really. Right. You know, it's a great commission, but my professional responsibilities demand that I travel a lot, and therefore I'm not going to continue as a commissioner. At such a point, for example, then we could be looking at new commissioners, or would be looking at new commissioners. And of course, if there was a recommendation for somebody that would represent the transportation industry, that would be very much welcome, that sort of recommendation.
All right. Any other questions this time? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing at 2886. And since there is no other business before us, we are adjourned.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.